To counter the effects of the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S. is piling up a mountain of debt.
Because we've hit such an economic shock, the gamble the Fed is taking right now is that the economy can bear all this money that the Fed's pumping into it without causing an outbreak of inflation.
We look at how that gamble could play out for the federal government and for states. Plus, our team answers more of your questions about the coronavirus. It's Thursday, April 9th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. New unemployment numbers out today paint a bleak picture of the U.S. labor market. Another 6.6 million people filed for unemployment benefits last week. That follows a revised number, 6.9 million, the week before. Altogether, nearly 17 million people have filed claims since the economy began shutting down last month. Our economics reporter, Sarah Cheney.
Each week that we see a historically high number of people applying for and receiving unemployment claims, it seems less likely that we're going to experience a rapid economic recovery once the coronavirus is contained and businesses start to reopen.
The British government says Prime Minister Boris Johnson's health is improving and he's out of intensive care. Johnson tested positive for COVID-19 2 weeks ago and was admitted to the ICU after having trouble breathing. He remains in the hospital for monitoring. And in the U.S., hospitals are putting in large orders for medical-grade face masks to protect health workers. But some say the shipments of N95 masks they're receiving are actually faulty imitations that fail even basic quality tests. Our reporter Austin Hufford says hospitals have been scrambling for supplies amid a national shortage.
Hospitals are turning to kind of this group of unknown resellers, sort of shadowy people that no one really knows who they are or where they come from. And so that means that they're selling products that are, you know, in many ways less legit than coming directly from the factory. And so this is just wasting their time, and it's also wasting their money and not letting them get the protective gear that doctors and nurses need.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Austin Hufford. From the federal deficit to bank loans for struggling businesses, the U.S. economy is racking up mountains of debt to stay afloat during the coronavirus pandemic. But how will the federal and state debt impact the economy's ability to bounce back? Joining me now is Wall Street Journal senior writer John Hilsenrath. So, John, the federal government has been taking on a lot of debt to counter this pandemic. We have the stimulus packages. The Federal Reserve just today announced another $2.3 trillion in lending programs. How unusual is this kind of activity and support by historical standards?
It's highly unusual. Even before this crisis, the federal government's debt amounted to about close to 90% of economic output as measured by gross domestic product. That was pretty close to where it was at its highs during World War II. So we were in a position where there was an awful lot of debt even before the crisis. And now we're talking about, you know, adding on top of maybe $18 trillion of debt held by the public, another $5 trillion in just the next 2 years.
That's certainly a lot of money. What kind of impact should we expect that huge amount of debt to have on the economic recovery once we're on the other side of this?
Well, it's a point of a lot of discussion among economists. It has been even before the crisis had started. So there's two different ways to look at this. You know, some people fear that when the government does all of this borrowing, because it's putting out so much supply of these treasury securities, that it would push up interest rates. Another fear is that when the government does all this borrowing and is pumping so much money into the system through it, it can cause inflation.
And actually, John, before you get to inflation, we've got a listener question from Lillian Dizon from Linthicum Heights, Maryland. She wants to know what effect the $2 trillion stimulus package could have in that regard.
With that much money that we pump into the market, and obviously the market is not on top of its productivity right now, then should we worry about inflation when we have so much cash in the economy and the productivity is low?
Well, and we did have surges of inflation after World War I and World War II, But the last few years, the last 10 years, something different has happened. You know, after the financial crisis of 2007, 2008, and 2009, there were big increases in debt, annual deficits over $1 trillion. And the Federal Reserve, which I think we should talk about, also played a big role in financing this debt. But we didn't get inflation. In fact, inflation for the last decade has been below the Fed's 2% target. Japan also, for two decades, has been running very large government debt loads, almost twice the level of GDP. And Japan has not had an upsurge of inflation or a pickup in interest rates. So there's a view among a lot of economists that something has fundamentally changed in how the economy works, and that we can afford to operate with higher debt loads because inflation and interest rates are so high that servicing the debt is a smaller cost than it used to be.
And John, what role does the Fed play in this, and what could be the repercussions down the line there?
Well, the Fed plays a critically important role on many levels. Let's talk first of all about government debt. So the Fed is buying a lot of these treasury bonds. And really what it does is, you know, something that people in economic realms talk about called printing money. The Fed is basically buying treasury bonds from banks in the private sector, and it's crediting their account with reserves that they can go turn around and pump into the economy. Now, in theory, when the Fed does this, when it pumps so much money into the financial system and uses it to finance government debt, that would cause inflation. But that didn't happen after the 07-08 period. And it's because of some of the longer-term forces that we think are at play in the economy. We have an aging population. We have a greater demand for saving, not only in the United States, but around the globe. And because there's so many savers out there, they're kind of holding back on pumping the money that the Fed pumps into the economy back into consumer goods that would push consumer prices higher. So the Fed is effectively going to be helping the government to finance these budget deficits over the next few years. It's also pumping a lot of money into the private sector by funding purchases of corporate bonds. Once again, it's meant to prop up the economy. And because we've hit such an economic shock, the gamble the Fed is taking right now is that the economy can bear all this money that the Fed's pumping into it without causing an outbreak of inflation.
And as we're going down in order from the macro to the micro, we have a couple of questions actually from another listener, Daniel White in Pennsylvania, about what the impact will be on state budgets.
So how much of an impact will COVID-19 have on these revenues for the states? How long before we see states completely burn through their rainy day funds? What would a federal bailout of the states look like in mechanism and magnitude?
Well, those are all really important questions. And the state picture is something that we have to be paying a lot of attention to. So the state governments fund themselves in a different way than the federal government. So the federal government runs these really large budget deficits, and it accumulates debts over time. The states are, you know, by their own design, forced to run balanced budgets over time. So, you know, that sounds like a fiscally prudent thing to do. The challenge is that when you hit an economic crisis, like now, like the 07-08 crisis, the states run really low on revenues. You know, for instance, especially right now, states depend on sales taxes for a lot of their revenues. And the stores are closed, the restaurants are closed. Where are those sales tax revenues going to come? The states are also on the hook for spending that tends to go up in a crisis, for instance, on unemployment insurance funds or on Medicaid. So there's a huge budget squeeze coming for the states. They do build up rainy day funds, and they do tap into these rainy day funds in a downturn. And some of them have really built them up quite extensively in the last few years, but it's uneven in different states just how aggressively they built up the rainy day funds. For this story that we did, we talked to Moody's Analytics, which does a lot of state and local economic research. And they said that states overall over the next year are going to run about $90 billion to $125 billion short on their budgets. And as a result, they're going to be facing some potentially devastating squeezes in cuts or potentially tax increases unless the federal government comes in and arranges some kinds of rescue for state governments. Now, Moody's also highlighted some of the states that are most vulnerable based on the economic shock and the state of their rainy day funds. It listed New York, Michigan, West Virginia, Louisiana, Missouri, Wyoming, and North Dakota as among the most vulnerable states. And what I find interesting about that is you get a sweep across the whole country, the Midwest, the Northeast, the South, the Northwest, and you get a mix of political perspectives too. So this is something that's going to hit a lot of people in a lot of places from a lot of different political persuasions.
That's Wall Street Journal senior writer John Hilsenrath. John, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow afternoon, we'll focus on the recovery for U.S. businesses and U.S. households. And finally, we've been fielding your questions about the coronavirus. We heard earlier from a couple of listeners asking about the economic effects of the pandemic. We've got one more question today, this one about social distancing, and it comes from Patty Smith in San Luis Obispo, California.
With people practicing so much social distancing and not being at work and other places, what are the wider effects of this regarding other sorts of illnesses? I'm thinking there would be fewer cases of the common cold, the usual annual flus, and fewer alcohol-involved accidents.
Our senior writer Betsy McKay covers public health.
With people practicing social distancing, it's certainly possible we would see fewer cases of some other illnesses, you know, infectious diseases. Certainly, there have been one or two studies about flu, levels of flu going down when, you know, people are not gathering in large places. So maybe fewer common colds, less flu. As regards other issues like alcohol-related incidents, that's hard to know. I mean, you know, social isolation may bring about more drinking. So, but certainly with infectious diseases, there might be a difference.
Do you have a coronavirus question? Leave us a voicemail at 315-992-8298. You can also find that number in our show description. We'll try to answer as many of your questions as we can. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back tomorrow in both the morning and the afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.